Osiris.
Kush Supply Co., or Kushco, is our wonderful Osiris sponsor and partner who also happens to be the largest producer of packaging products for the cannabis industry. As medical and recreational cannabis continue to be legalized, One Leader has emerged as the go-to company to produce state-compliant packaging for cannabis, and that's Kushco. What does that mean? States have varying laws about how marijuana can be packaged. They need to be childproof, comply with labeling requirements, and so on. Kush knows all the regulations for every state, but the packaging doesn't have to be ugly. Kushco works with producers to create their own branding on amazingly innovative boxes, tubes, bottles, and other packages, so they look amazing and function extremely well. Kushco also produces vaping hardware and supplies. If you've been in a cannabis dispensary lately, you've definitely seen Kushco products. Kushco has offices in 10 states, plus Canada and China. Please go to kushcosupplyco.com/podcast to learn more about what they're up to. And we thank them again for being a wonderful Osiris partner.
Hey, everybody. This is the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is episode 150. I'm here with Brad, Matt, and Jonathan. What's up, guys?
Hey, now.
Hey, man.
Hey.
That was a nice, deep intro.
Thanks. Brad, what did you get us for our 150th episode? Did you get us a present?
Yeah, no, I got us a national park. I'm dedicating a stretch of I-40 to the Helping Friendly Podcast.
That's pretty good. I mean,
yeah.
We were texting earlier, and I think, you know, you have to mention that this is the sesquicentennial episode. Jonathan, wouldn't you say that's appropriate?
I think if you can say sesquicentennial, it's always appropriate.
I feel like in Virginia, you got to like have all kinds of celebrations of all kinds of things that are hundreds of years old, you know? Probably do that like every couple weeks.
Yeah, we trip over something and look, anniversary.
we've been planning this episode for a little while. We'll talk about what the episode's actually about at some point. But guys, we've 150 episodes. Now, this does not count, of course, our quick hits, which I think Matt, the official number might be more like 230 or something with quick hits, but
249 things that have been put out. Quick hits, little like intro johns, everything that we've ever put out is 249.
Wow.
So way to sneak that Philly in there with the Johns.
Hey man, there's tons of Johns. We push out Johns regularly.
We're constantly just doing Johns. Brad, you and I started this podcast almost 6 years ago, June of 2013.
Yeah.
And we didn't know anything about what we were doing. We didn't know how to do a podcast. We didn't even really, I mean, we listened to a couple of podcasts. That was the extent of our preparation, you know?
Yeah, there were no podcast networks. There were no like multiple apps you could get to listen to podcasts, right?
No.
I had to download it. You had to download the podcast before you listen to it, usually. I remember the first, I'm sure we've told the story, but the first episode, I had my kid's iPad. It had like the bumper on it with the monster bumper with like the handles and earbuds. You know what I mean? And like an earbuds, and I was like walking around the house. And we had a little outline that I was reading from the iPad. It was really awesome. That was the first one.
Wow.
I remember Rachel listening to that one. She was like,
"It's pretty bad.
That wasn't very good."
she was like, maybe you guys shouldn't read like from a script. Like,
yeah, the scripting. Shoot.
Yeah.
So obviously we've gone in the completely opposite direction where
it's so professional now.
So professional because we don't write down a single word. We just say what comes to our mind.
Right, right.
So Matt, you as the person who's been here since it's been 2 or 3 years. Your first appearance on the podcast was, I think, early 2016 after Mexico.
Yeah, it was the first Mexico, so it was almost exactly 3 years ago.
I remember there was a huge snowstorm.
That's right.
In the DC area, and you were recapping your trip to Mexico, and you've contributed maybe the most of any of us, if I can speak for all of us in terms of making us better and more professional and somehow like more serious and respectable. So thank you. Matt, what are some of your memories in terms of the last, you know, I guess almost probably 50 or so episodes, official episodes that you've been on, but over the past several years?
I think probably, like, if I had to pick one episode that was really, really cool and landmark that stood out, probably the Katie Turr interview that we did was really big. That was kind of a long time coming between planning it and putting it together. It was talking to her when she was sort of having a moment with her book coming out and everything like that was super, super exciting, and felt like a lot of like really good vindication for us as a, you know, semi-professional outlet. But I've also really, really dug the live events that we've done. It's been crazy going out and getting people to come out and like being like, oh wow, there's all these people face to face with us who know who we are and want to interact with us and stuff like that. So that's been pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. And Jonathan, I think you had mentioned that too, at least in your notes, about the live events. But you first appeared on the podcast episode 33. Where we talked about the best fish jam of all time, the Providence Bowie. And I think because you came on for that jam, then you kind of just stuck around and started helping. And you actually helped us. I remember you making similar suggestions to what Matt made, but I think in terms of like planning and organizing and like maybe planning ahead for the things we might talk about the next time. Anyway, that was like big leaps forward as well.
Well, I don't want to take any credit for improving this thing, but I've had fun working on it. I want to reiterate, as you alluded to, what Matt said. It's like one of my favorite things about this has been the appearances, and particularly our first live appearance at American Beauty, where all four of us were there, and that was during Baker's Dozen, and then just having the opportunity to meet so many very nice listeners who, you know, walk up and say, hey, you do that thing and I like it. And I'm like, oh, well, thank you. It's rad. And they've all been very nice, which is surprising considering that sometimes one or two of us have polarizing opinions.
Only Brad.
I mean, polarizing is... You know, I was telling someone earlier that you know, we're doing our 150th podcast for our fish podcast, and that you could watch their face just kind of like dull, like, you know what I mean?
Like, anyway. Did they ask you why?
No, they're just like, oh, yes, I've heard. Okay. Anyway, well, one of the things I want to talk about too, RJ, was just like the what's been memorable to me is you kind of taking it to the video live stream YouTube thing. That's been really exciting too, because I think that's kind of the next step, and you've always kind of thought about it and always pushed for it, and it's a good idea, and I think it's the next, right? It's the next podcasting, video casting.
Thanks.
Vlogging. You're a good vlogger.
Thanks. I've always wanted to be a vlogger. Like, that's what remember when I was in kindergarten, that was kind of like that was one of my main career choices. Right. No, thanks for saying that. I think, you know, it's interesting, Brett. I remember recording the third episode. I think it was the third episode, which was the Old Orchard Beach show from July of 94.
Yeah.
And I was in my parents' basement in Ohio, and I was recording, you know, connected to whatever kind of mic we were using at the time. And my parents, my dad was like, what the hell are you doing? Like, you're talking to Brad on the computer in a dark basement about fish like you guys did like 20 years ago. And I was like, it's like basically what we've been doing our whole life, except now on the internet. But the live shows have been so cool. That first one being during the Baker's Dozen, and the fact that we were all there and Tom was our guest and we had Scott Marks, and it was just, man, that was really cool. And having people, like Jonathan said, come up to you and tell you that they actually like what you do is really gratifying. in, I think it was 2015, I was in Chicago with Rachel and pushing Miles in a stroller, and some dude came up to me and was like, "Hey, are you RJ from the Helping Friendly podcast?" And I was like, "Yeah, man." And he was like, "I love your podcast." And it was like, I think Rachel thought that it was like a plant, you know,
that I like you're doing it for her to show off.
Yeah, like I paid somebody to like do it, you know, ahead of time.
So told you I'm famous, babe.
Yeah, exactly.
That was how much just did so that cool. cost you?
It was like, you know, $275, and I talked him down a little bit, but that was just, it's cool just to hear people appreciating it, basically. But Matt, the one thing that the double tweezer episode, I think, was one of our most well-received episodes, and you spent a ton of time on that, just, you know, with the research and the everything. That was like that level of depth and, you know, insight. I don't think we've gone there since, but maybe we should do more like that.
A few more highlights that I would point out were, we all talk about all the time, but the taper episode, which I think is around 15. And obviously, Jonathan, you've already mentioned Tom's interview, which is around 80, 88 maybe, or something like that. The Katie Turr episode. What are some watermarks, some landmarks for maybe new listeners? Nothing? Nobody?
Yeah, it's just a bunch of fish stuff. I was going to say, though, you mentioned the tweezer episode, and we've also mentioned meeting listeners. So when we did that tweezer episode, RJ and I went to Matt's house. And I think, RJ, you'd met Matt in person, but I had not. And so I was like, who is this? Who's this guy? We're going to go to his house, and he's going to listen to the podcast. We're going to talk about, okay, just going to go hang out at some dude's house. Okay, hope he's cool. Turns out it's just Matt. No.
You guys take your own mics?
He's all right. What's that?
Yeah, Jonathan did bring his own mics, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome. Of course. He's a taper. He's an old taper.
The second part of the tweezer episode, we were in a much different state of mind than the first go-round.
I don't know what you're talking about. You mean we were in Maryland?
One thing that's really funny is Brad and I think since the beginning have really tried to just like have fun and make jokes, even with guests. And I remember a few specific times when I remember two specific episodes with guests where our whole intention the whole time was just to make jokes, and the guest was like not in. I think guests sometimes are nervous, you know, to come on a podcast, and so they're like, it's a little bit less conversational. But I remember one in particular where Brad and I kept making jokes and they were just not landing, which was just making it funnier and funnier, and I had to like mute myself almost the whole time. And Brad and I had the most legendarily uncomfortable interview very early on.
Oh man.
That started when I probably asked the question a little bit too open-endedly about the person's life, and man, it was a doozy. It was like 27 minutes. 27 minutes later, we got into this question number two, and I'll never forget that. That was probably the biggest learning experience of this whole thing.
Is that when you learned how to go back and edit down to like
draft questions better?
I was looking for like a point to cut off, and it was you know, stream of consciousness from the guest. And anyway, don't start an interview.
That guest is now
asking,
it's pretty famous though. That guest is like doing well and like relatively famous for what, you know, he or she
just
does.
Don't start an interview by saying, "Tell us about your life." It's not a great way to start an interview.
Yeah.
So the one thing I would say, which should go without saying for this group of the four of us, but man, the stuff with Tom and what that's led to with Osiris and all of us being part of such a bigger community of music fans and music podcasts, it's just been incredible. And, you know, to be a little bit cliche, like just do something you're passionate about and good things will come of it, you know, especially when it comes to listening to fish or drinking beer, because I've found that drinking beer has had the same effect.
Yeah. And by the way, I mean, we've mentioned like people coming up to us and saying hi. I won't speak for everybody, but I'll speak for myself. Don't ever feel shy about doing that. It's super, super cool. We're not to a level of being noticed where it's problematic. And in fact, in Mexico, There was a moment in the middle of a show where a woman came up to me in the middle of it, and she was like, "Hey, I recognize you. Thank you so much for everything you do." And having that happen with my wife standing right next to me is actually pretty awesome. It gets me big time points. And so you should all continue to come up to us and make us look way cooler than we are in front of our spouses.
That's a good point. No, I agree with you. I think that hearing from people via email or social media or in person, stuff is just, it's cool. Cause I think that I just met, one of our listeners, Richard Nash, on the Metro a few days ago. He came up to me and we've like communicated with him, and he just came up and introduced himself. And it was really cool to meet people who, cause I think everyone thinks it's like awkward or going to be awkward or whatever, but it turns out we're all just like,
it is for a little bit, like for like first couple seconds it's awkward, but then after that
medium awkward.
I will say it's not going to impress my wife at all if you say something to me in public, but that's okay.
So I think that just to wrap this sort of section up, of course the most important thing is all of you listening and giving us iTunes reviews and high fives in person and, you know, feedback and your long emails that say how much you appreciate it, or when we hit you at a time in your life when you needed some, you know, fish. It's really cool. So keep that coming. I mean, don't say those exact things if you don't really want
to. The communication thing, I want to add, and I know you're trying to wrap it up, but Jason from the recent episode about sobriety and all that, that was his idea, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And it kind of bore out of just a simple email to us. So it shows that, I mean, we're not just doing this for ourselves, right? It's for everybody, obviously.
Yeah, and good. We're always looking for good ideas. I wish that we had like this really cool, long, you know, list of cool ideas that we're just trying to make it our way through. We just, cool ideas come up sometimes, but people bring...
I lost it, actually. I fucking lost it.
You lost it. Brad dropped it in his pool, and that's too bad.
Yeah, it wasn't in very good ink either, so it's just all this blue smear on a piece of notebook paper now. It's a damn shame.
So, guys, happy sesquicentennial, and let's talk about some fish news. So, Matt, can you remind everybody what to do if they were at Big Cypress and want to tell us about it?
Yeah, so you've heard the last couple episodes and you've seen it on social media. If you were at Big Cypress and you want to share your story with us, we want to hear it. We want to hear it in audio form. So we've gotten a whole bunch of emails with really cool written stories and pictures and all that kind of stuff. That's great. You should continue to share that. But what we really want is for you to record yourself telling your story and email that to bigcypress@osirispod.com. If we like what we hear, we may include part of that in our upcoming huge Big Cypress retrospective. Or if it's really neat, we may reach out to you and ask to do kind of more of a formal interview and get some tasty nuggets out of you for that. So send that in. Doesn't matter how trivial you think it is. The more we can hear from as many people as possible about what your experience was like, the better. So keep those coming. We like what we got so far.
Yeah,
it's easy to send audio notes too, right? Like you can record yourself on an Android or an iPhone, and then just like email it, and that's all we need. Right?
Yeah,
I mean, it doesn't have to be techie.
Exactly. Yeah. Just use the voice memo app on your phone. Try to make sure you're in a quiet environment so we get a clean recording. But, you know, once again, if you've got a great story and we think we'd like to record it in a little bit better fashion, then we'll reach out to you and we'll try to make that happen.
You know, if people don't submit stuff, though, it's just going to be me talking about it. And nobody wants to hear my Big Cypress story exclusively.
Fest.
Right. Yeah.
Jonathan had a kid with him, so his story is probably not nearly as epic as any of yours.
Well, we wouldn't have to put the rating on it, though, so the explicit tag on it.
So that, as Matt mentioned, that's going to be a multi-part podcast extravaganza that's going to come out later this year. So please send us all your thoughts. Mexico. So Matt was actually in Mexico seeing fish last week. And if you all missed our quick hits, we did too. They just passed us by while Matt was on the beach and the rest of us were doing things. But Matt was a guest on Beyond the Pond, which I think by the time this comes out, Beyond the Pond will be out. So if you want to hear Matt's horrible fish opinions, you can tune into Beyond the Pond.
Yes, Los Opinions Terribles or something like that. We took the quick hit and in the spirit of going cross borders, did that over on Beyond the Pond. That's coming out today as well. Ooh, so like you can listen nice. To that. I believe it's today or maybe yesterday when you're hearing this. We talked to Brian and Dave about Mexico and what that was like. And then in true Beyond the Pond fashion, they took that and ran with it and talked about some other stuff that you might want to hear if you liked those Mexico shows. So go ahead and dig that. And if you're not already listening to Beyond the Pond, you should be, because those guys are absolutely killing it.
If they didn't mention Enrique or Julio Iglesias, I'm not fucking listening to it.
I really like the idea that they had to kind of extrapolate for this episode. So I'm looking forward to listening to it. It's a cool idea. So everyone check it out. If you are in the Washington DC region and you're going to the Mike Gordon show in DC, like Matt, Jonathan, and I are on March 15th, after that show, there's going to be an after party show with The Last Rewind, which is a Fish cover band. David, who's I think the principal sort of creator of that band, he's a fan of ours and a listener, and asked us to get the word out that they're playing an after show at the Velvet Lounge, 11:30 after the Mike show. So if you're into listening to awesome music after the Mike Gordon show in DC, go check them out at the Velvet Lounge. Anything else in fish news? Is there like a bunch of records came out or videos, VHS releases, beta, anything like that?
Ray's on tour soon. That's the only thing I would add. Is yep. that the ghosts of the forest?
Ghosts of the forest.
As I alluded to earlier at the beginning of the episode when we were doing our retrospective, which I hope was accompanied by sentimental music, I mentioned Osiris and... As you know, we're part of that network. I wanted to say that one of our podcasts, Female Centrics, the only female-hosted podcast in the entire Osiris network, they're celebrating...
In the entire world, actually. On fish, at least.
At least on fish, yeah, definitely. Yeah. They're celebrating their one-year anniversary this month, and it's cool. Dawn created this with, you know, a really cool idea and engaged a ton of people, and they're growing and having fun, and so congratulations to Dawn and her team.
Has it really been a year? That's awesome. I like that show.
I know. Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah,
Osiris has been around for a year.
We've been around for a year. A lot of people have been around for a year. Broke Down Podcast has been around for
2 years.
More than a year. Yeah.
2 years, actually. The Twitter account hit its two-year anniversary the other day.
One thing, wow. Jonathan, when we were talking about the kind of the history of the podcast, it's cool that you kind of got some experience doing this, and then it led to an entirely new idea that you, or at least, I don't know if it led to the idea, but at least like made you comfortable with doing your own podcast, which is so cool.
Yeah, that's been fun. I quite enjoy it, and I guess I could say thank you guys.
No, thank you. Thank you for bringing Grateful Dead music to our ears.
It's my pleasure.
Discussion. That interview you did with Bill Payne from Little Feet, I thought was really cool.
Cool. Thank you. He made it easy. He's awesome, actually.
He repeated your name a bunch of times, which made me think that he was actually like paying attention in the interview and interested, which is cool. You know, like it's cool
it
to hear.
He's tricked to remember.
It might be, right? But that's a cool, like I texted Jonathan that. It's like interviews where the person who's being interviewed is actually enjoying it are like so much more fun to listen to.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't feel like an obligation, where they're just running through questions. So, Female Centrics, Dawn interviewed Carl Gearhart, I don't know, 4 months ago or something. People should check out that interview. That was really cool. And he talked about the whole history of the giant country horns and the suits and all kinds of cool fish stories and history. So if you haven't listened to that, go back to that, and congrats to Dawn. There's also like many, many other Osiris podcasts who are all doing cool stuff. And, the week after this, you hear this, there'll be a new Osiris original podcast coming out that's going to kind of highlight music news and music, what's going on in the music world. So watch out for that. Okay, guys, should we do an actual episode or should we just kind of talk and then see what happens?
I think this has been pretty good.
Yeah, I got to go.
My arm's actually hurting from patting ourselves on the back.
Oh, is that what it was?
My arm actually is hurting from pushing this broken stroller today. I was pushing my twins to the Natural History Museum, and I left the broken stroller next to a trash can on the National Mall. So if you happen to be driving down on the National Mall and see a stroller tomorrow, that's mine. Okay, guys, this week, 10 years from when Phish came back in 2009, it's incredible that it's been 10 years and that they're still fucking playing. So that's what we're going to talk about. Matt, as the person who saw Phish in, 2003 for the first time, when you saw them in 2009, did you think that 10 years later you'd still be seeing Phish, honestly?
No. I probably because of my experience in the starts and stops and seeing them and, you know, finally getting to see them in 2003 after years of being a fan and them not being around, I had this sort of like, I don't know if you'd call it PTSD or something, you know, conditioning or something like that, that like, I was like, they're going to come back for like 2 or 3 years and then they're just going to go away again. This is going to happen. So I saw a lot of shows in those first couple of years of 3.0 because I was just seriously making up for lost time.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be, a couple of year thing. Brad, what about you?
I don't know. I haven't thought about that question. It's, I think I'm more along the lines of, I can't believe that they're back and still going. And it seems like at this point we kind of take it for granted, but in 2010, you were like, oh, sweet. Another tour is planned. Yeah. Right.
Right.
Like it wasn't really looking like ahead. And I think that relates to what Matt was saying, that used to the start and stop from, 2000 until 2004 or whatever. So, not too sure.
And not coincidentally at all, summer 2013, when we launched this podcast, is really when 3.0, I think, started, becoming solidified. And I think that's mostly because of the podcast. But Jonathan.
If you think about it.
That's when 3.0 became president.
Exactly. So, Jonathan, you heard the Mike Gordon interviews on Under the Scales recently, and Mike talked a lot about his side projects and what he did during that hiatus, and Trey obviously went through his whole thing. What, I guess, like I was thinking about just how many things had to come together and actually work for them to be able to even come back in 2009 to Hampton, but just all the different musical influences and side projects and things they were doing all kind of put on hold a little bit to go back to Phish. I mean, Mike talked a little bit about that, but just curious for your take on like your perspective on how that all came back together.
Mike has ever since Phish has returned, he's really seemed to be more comfortable talking about his side projects and thinking of Phish more of his, those are his main things, and Phish as his side project, the thing that pays all the bills or whatever it is, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but that's just what I've perceived from a number of interviews. Whereas Trey, it's all the work. Phish is one of the great joys, the brotherhood with the band, the connection with the audience. It's one of the core pieces, but it's all just what he does. Paige, I think Paige likes to hang out at home in between, although there's still rumors of a new Vita Blue thing, but nothing's really come to light. And Phish, he's the man now. He's in government, so therefore he's the enemy. But yeah, so
he's the model, actually. I don't
really know if I'm answering your question, RJ, but to me, it just seemed like once Trey had his head straight, it could happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And God, I was so glad it did. And I might say more about this later, but when we were after the announcement, Trey did a little classic tab tour that fall of 2008, and he played in Richmond, and I went with a bunch of friends, and it was great. And Trey was so excited. He was talking about Hampton. He was like, well, we just want to just drive down there and camp until March, and yes, he was amped for it to happen. And we all were too.
I want to say something too. I was listening to some 06 tab shows, and even some earlier ones. There's some chatter on Twitter last month just about them. And so I was going back. But anyway, it kind of took me back to 06, and Trey was arrested in December of 06. And then he played shows after that in late December of 06. And if you listen to those shows, and they're not terrible, but if you listen to enough Fish and Trey, they're bad, and you can hear it from him. And I think at that point, I'm thinking, or, you know, while listening, I'm thinking, like, man, this doesn't, he just doesn't sound healthy. It sounds like it's not what you know or what you want. And to think that basically 2 years later, they're back full-blower Fish. It's a huge testament to a turnaround he made, I think, in his own life. And you know, we don't need to toot Trey's horn, because whatever. I mean, he stands on his own, but it's really awesome. And that just past couple weeks or two that I've done that. So it's great that we're back, and it's 10 years later, even after that. But anyway,
No, it's a good point. That was something I was thinking about. Like, we've learned so much more about Trey's journey just in the past year, I think, you know, just on interviews and him talking about it, that I think when they came back, I think we all knew that he was newly sober, but like millions of rock stars, who knows, right? Like, it could have just,
right.
Maybe it was going to go back, or maybe it was going to, you know, I don't think we knew that the extent and dedication that he had, that we've learned about recently, like through the serious interviews and lots of other stuff. And I feel like we can talk about it in the actual show discussion, but I was listening back to these shows. There's a totally different sound from 2004, and maybe that seems obvious because of all the things we've already talked about and just the fact that they've evolved, but it doesn't sound anything like 2.0. And do you guys, Matt, do you think that that's because of like a fresh start sort of thing? Like, you even the effects and just like the sound is just so different.
I think at that point, one of the things that they seemed to be doing was to take a step back and get back to a version of the band that they had been previously. Hmm. You know, remember they changed the stage layout back to what it had been in some of the classic years. Mm-hmm. Trey did things like he brought his 2x12 speaker cabinets back that he hadn't used for years, that kind of created the visual aesthetic of that he had in previous years. He brought back the Ross compressor after, you know, fans gifted it to them. Even the lighting rig, it used more modern lights, but it seemed to kind of replicate what the lighting rig looked like circa 97, 98. I think they were consciously trying to go back to something that was sort of pleasing for the fans and felt comfortable. But at the same time, they were 5 years removed from what they had done before. You know, they hadn't been playing together, so there was definite cobwebs that took several years to shake off. So you had kind of a different thing, as well as probably a different reason for making music. I mean, these weren't guys that were trying to go out and, you know, set the world on fire and prove who they were anymore. They were trying to redeem themselves.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I hadn't thought about that with the lights and the sound in that way. But we can talk about when we get in. There's a few things that you start to hear in 3.0 that come up in these shows in terms of their sound. But it is sort of a fresh start. But maybe, yeah, going back to a time when it was a little bit more, simpler times. Simpler times, because you know, 97 was very simple back then for them. So, Jonathan, I think you were there at the Hampton shows the first night. Brad and I were there together. We were there all three nights. Were you there all three nights, Jonathan?
Yes, I was.
Matt?
Yep.
Okay, so we were all. That's so cool that we were all there. Mm-hmm. Jonathan, what was your What was it like for you going in that first night?
You know, this was, I've been to a few big shows, like quote unquote big shows, if you will. This was probably the most significant, the biggest deal of them all. We had a huge crew of good friends, some of whom I had never seen Fish with before, because we had become friends in the years since, you know, in the 5 years since Fish had split up. some of whom I had been seeing shows with forever. My brother Joel was back. He's not my biological brother, but he's my brother. And he had flown out for the shows from, you know, exile in the Midwest. And, you know, it was great to have that, first of all. We had all those people together. I think everybody had a similar experience, and you guys had each other and probably a few of other people that you'd seen shows with over the years. And Matt, you probably did the same. And so the vibe was amazing outside. The weather was pretty good for mm-hmm. March. And mm-hmm. Walking into the first night, somebody offered me $1,000 cash for my ticket. I said, $1,000? He's like, yeah, man. I said, show me. He pulls out a wad of hundreds and fans them out. And I was like, 1, 2, 3. I was like, nah. There's no way, no amount of money would I have given up that ticket. So I said, good luck. And he might have got one. But not from me. And yeah, it was true. We posted up behind, kind of right on the rail behind Paige. And so we could see him and every, you know, perfect spot. I'm a behind the stage guy, so it was a perfect spot for my team to watch this show. And holy cow, you know, do I get into the music now, or are we just talking about the scene? Because I could go there, or we could send it around the room a little bit.
It's all you, man. I think you should go.
Well, okay, so obviously Fluffhead opens, and we had not guessed it. So, in fact, on the Week for Pog Fish Forum, we had a pool going for the opener. And there were, I don't know how many people, 30, 40 people, I don't know, a huge group of people in the pool. Nobody picked Fluffhead because it was all but unimaginable. Like, yeah, really? Yeah. Fluffhead? Mike said no. Why is my, you know, that wasn't going to happen. They're not going to start with Fluffhead. They're going to start with like Chalk Dust, you know, that's an opener. No, they started with Fluffhead. It was amazing. I'm not saying it was perfect, but it was amazing.
It was probably the best played Fluffhead of 3.0.
There you go.
You know,
and then, going back, I think in if we're talking about the music, just generally from my above, it's not as bad as you think it is. It's not any. It's not type two. Well, you know what I mean.
Like, yeah, these no, shows yeah. don't. That's what we're gonna say.
No credence. These shows get no credence. But the Fluffhead is probably the best played of 3.0. You know what I mean? Like, it's so yeah. It nothing gets deep. Nothing. You know.
Certainly not on this first night. But,
right.
But yeah. Then the Divided Sky that followed it was. I was overwhelmed. I want to specifically shout out Pie Guy and Birdman, who got those seats for us. And they sound like ridiculous names, but these are amazing.
Totally
people.
Ridiculous.
You have rapper friends.
What are you in the? You're in the mafia?
Yeah. Well, so Dave
Johnny
wore this shirt that said "I Heart Pie."
Yeah, Jeezy.
Squee was Squee there.
Squee was there doing keg stands in the parking lot. And
Mom was in the station wagon.
And these are like internet handles, you know? I mean, we all have real names, but that's for them to know. Anyways, they got us great seats, and these guys have been my brothers ever since. So we had just an outstanding time through the whole run. I will spare you, you know, talking about it, these people anymore. But yeah, so, you know, it was just so many songs, so many freaking songs that first set. And and we had some little hashtag micro jams in Stash and in the Bowie. Old school, you know, Okie Pa Susie. Just, you know, a lot of rock and roll. It was great. So good.
So long. So, Matt, that first set is almost 2 hours long.
So we were talking about, you know, like, what we thought was going to happen and expectations and changing and stuff like that. And first off, just to take a step back in terms of like the like getting into the show and everything like that, it was one of the, still to this day, one of the greatest scenes I've ever witnessed or been a part of. Like, you know, for people that weren't there or weren't fans at that point, they announce the shows like so much longer than, you know, but we usually have. Like, people think it's a long time when, like, you announce, you know, summer tour in like February and you've got to wait until June or July for shows. Like, they announced the reunion, I believe it was at the end of August, right?
Yeah.
In 2008 very early September. And then the shows went on sale in October, and then we had to wait until March. So, I mean, it was a good 5 months between, that. And, you know, we had known about tickets. The ticket situation was the most insane ever, and probably will never come anywhere close to that again. So, you know, I mean, those of us that got tickets for Face were extremely lucky. That was like the typical, you know, if I'm remembering correctly, I got all of mine through lottery, but I think I had like 20 different people who weren't fans put in lottery entries for me or something like that. I mean, it was just like, it was insane. Getting hotel rooms within the Hampton Roads vicinity was insane. People were trying to like buy hotel room reservations off of each other.
Right.
But then, like, once you got there, you know, the whole area out in front, the fountain had that block man in it. It was all decorated. There was guys like rowing a rowboat around in the fountain, and they had like that like red fluffy stuff up in the trees. And because it was such a big deal, like, there wasn't really much of a shakedown because everybody just went and got in line to get in. We were pretty close to the front of the line, but I remember looking back along that walkway that runs away from the Coliseum, and it was just people as far as you could see.
Well, they did have one lot. It was the H2O lot. It was off, not at the adjacent down the walkway parking lot, but it was off the other side where there was kind of full-blown shakedown. But it was, you had to cross a street. It wasn't the convention center lot. It was across from that. But they had full blown shakedown there.
Okay.
But that was it.
I never even made it down
there. They were very kind of restricted, and they funneled all the people who showed up early for vending over to that that lot.
But not your typical thing where everybody waits until, you know, ticket time and then tries to go in at that point. I mean, when the doors open, the place filled up immediately.
Absolutely.
And then you get inside, and instead of the house lights, they've got these enormous balls hanging all around the ceiling with a lighting rig in the center of the ceiling around the scoreboard, lighting them up. Mm-hmm. That was providing like the illumination for the room. So it had this eerie orange glow when you were inside. And then they, of course, used all those balls to great effect in all the lighting and everything like that. In terms of the opener, Fluffhead, it's funny. I had been saying to people, like, for months, I was like, it's going to be Fluffhead. It's going to be Fluffhead. Stop. Knowing in the back of my mind, there's absolutely no way it's going to happen. And when people would say like, oh, come on, that's not really going to happen, I'd be like, no, that's the dream. That's the ultimate opener that they could play. And if they want to show us that they're serious, then they'll open with Fluffhead, but there's no fucking way it's ever going to happen. And then they opened with it, and probably, I mean, to this day, the loudest thing I've ever heard when the lights went down, but when they played when Trey played the first notes of Fluffhead, the sound inside that room was just deafening.
Yeah. It was awesome. My friend Tim was punching me on the arm repeatedly, like at the beginning of Fluffhead, and not like didn't stop for a while until I was like, dude, can you stop punching me? I was just so excited. In terms of the, you mentioned the Mike saying no thing, Jonathan. So for people who don't know, maybe everybody knows this, but they hadn't played Fluffhead since fall of 2000, right? And in 2003 at some point, the crowd was chanting and Mike and Trey went and talked and Trey came back and said, Mike said no. When in reality, I think it was that Trey like was like, I can't, there's no way we can play that song right now.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But, or maybe it was Mike who made it clear that no, Trey, there's no way we can play this song right now.
Yeah.
Either Mike way. Told Trey he couldn't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We don't know.
He didn't say Mike said no because I can't play it. He just said Mike said no. So right. We'll never know. But they came back and yeah, you're right. It was such a great statement. What a long set. I don't remember it being that long. Like this.
It's two first sets being that long. I think.
Yeah.
Susie ends the first set. And then Farmhouse to Bowie is the second first set.
That's true. That could be two sets.
Right? There was a certain point, probably around Water in the Sky, where I started thinking, like, man, maybe this is the newer Fish. Like, they're just not going to play two sets anymore because, I mean, you're closing in on 2 hours in this first set. I mean, this whole thing. I mean, they came on just after 8 o'clock and they played until like almost 1:30 in the morning. I mean, it was a long show. It was like a New Year's Eve length show, and it was a tip, you know, quote unquote regular two set show.
Yeah, we were definitely thinking the same thing during that first set. After a while, it was like, wait, another song? Are they not? We don't do set breaks now. I mean, I was tired. I was like, this. I didn't stop dancing, but holy shit, I could use a break, guys.
So the playing in the shows is good. Like they were practiced. They were pretty well practiced, right?
Yes. It was tight.
It's interesting because you hear like the criticisms of 3.0 being, you know, that there's just like a lot of flubs and not a lot of attention played to the compositions, but they had obviously been practicing and spending a lot of time with this stuff.
Yeah, I think at this point it was more like they're just playing a lot of songs. They're not jamming. They're playing them really well. They were obviously very, very well rehearsed. But, you know, once again, to make a comparison to going back to something from earlier days, there was, you know, these were kind of almost more like 91, 92 kind of shows, just playing a lot of songs, playing them really, really, really well. There's some songs that have some degree of like type one jamming, but they're just going to rip through a ton of songs. And there's one thing I wanted to mention that I actually wanted to mention before we got into the first show, because like a handful of different times on various episodes, and so it's kind of cool that this is our 150th episode to bring this up, I've referenced this quote that there was a New York Times piece that came out like the day before the first show, that was like the first interview with Fish, written by John Perales, who's an amazing music writer, leads music writing for the New York Times. We should link to this from the show notes. But this quote from Trey has stuck to me. And it's funny because like thinking about the way that things were in the world in 2009, that this was so appropriate. And if you think about, you know, did you think it was going to be this way 10 years later? And it's even more appropriate. You know, Trey was talking about the intention for coming back and everything like that. And the paragraph here, if you that always sticks in my mind, is he said, the piece says, he also has another mission in mind. As a longtime fan of Depression era swing bands, he has been thinking about Fish's role in the current recession. And Trey's quote begins, "For people in hard times, we can play long shows of pure physical pleasure. They come to dance and forget their troubles. It's like a service commitment." And that, I mean, I think that's like a mission statement for 3.0, and that stuck with me. And I think it really definitely started that night with this marathon show to sort of bring everybody back into it.
Wow. That's cool. Yeah, we should definitely link to that. I remember when it came out.
Is that the same article? I was just thinking about it too, man. It's pretty funny. But that where he talks about 80 songs played, or 80 originals, or was that after?
I think that was afterwards, but yeah,
the review after when they were like, they played 80 plus originals or 80, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's insane too, to think about three nights with 80 songs, right? Like, oh man. Anyway.
So I guess I would argue that this era starts in the second set with the first backwards down the number line to open the second set, which, you know, listening back to it, it was a little bit of a different intro than what you hear today, but it was like quiet, people were confused, and I feel like that's still what happens when they play it. But you know, I'm a defender of the song. So the first version is important, and that I think everyone knows the importance of this song in terms of just Phish history, and why it's important. Does everyone already know that?
Yeah, we know that. But I would say that yes, this is where we first got 3.0'd. But at the same time, like, I had seen the song on the Trey tour that I mentioned earlier at the Trey show, and it was amazing. It was so good at that show that when, albeit after the initial kind of awkward beginning, when he started playing it at this show, you know, I was like, oh, this song, I love this song. This song is so good. Can't wait for the end part, because the rave up at the end had been so good on the Classic Tab tour.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, it was different. It was arranged differently, but because it's Phish. But I thought it was great. It has a nice, really uplifting solo on it. I think worked pretty well. And then they play Tweezer.
Yeah. And you can hear, you can definitely hear the crowd, like, when they drop it to the jam, you can hear the crowd, like, have a collective cheer of just, like, okay, cool. This is when we jam Tweezer, just like back in the day. It's cool to hear people come to a collective realization, like, oh, cool, we're still doing Tweezer. Great. I feel like a lot of these jams the first night were just really, they had a real soulful, positive feel to them. Even though, you know, not a lot of super long jams, but really, like, this was a better show, I thought, going back to it than I had maybe given it credit for. But
I agree
maybe
with
that's
that.
Just me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At some point in theme, or maybe at the end of theme, you can hear Trey say what time is it? I think they, he's just like, let's just keep playing. We'll just play like 100 more songs. And then, man, there's so many songs in this second set too, especially a very long, you know, closer. But Matt, what do you have any highlights from this set in terms of the music?
You know, the Tweezer, which is kind of a standardish Tweezer, doesn't really go type two or anything like that. It's pretty linear in its trajectory, with a nice drop into Taste. I loved the Harry Hood when Kuroda turned on. He had all of these little spinning disco balls that were like illuminated from the inside. That were hung all over the venue, and he turned out all the lights, and it just, the entire inside of the venue looked like a giant disco ball. That was really neat. I think, you know, when I look at this show, it's easy to be critical of it because there's no jams and stuff like that. But this show is still gets 4 stars for me because it's just the intangibles. And that may be tough to describe to people who weren't there or who weren't fans at the time, but it was just such a big deal. And you know, I mean, people may sound jaded about it now, but nobody left that building feeling on less than cloud nine. I mean, we're just so happy to have them back.
Oh yeah.
I agree.
So they close the hood is really nice, and they close the set with "You Enjoy Myself."
Wasn't there a start stop or they restarted it? Didn't they?
Yeah.
And it was kind of like the there's a nod to like 03, or some people were saying maybe it was
"You Enjoy Myself" at 03.
Yeah, I don't know if I know people were saying that a lot at the time, that it was like a sick joke that they restarted it because the last time they played it at Hampton, they restarted it. I just think they fucked it up.
Right, but again, they fucked it up back then too, didn't they?
Yeah,
so
it's like yeah, exactly.
It's tricky. You ever play that? It's tricky.
Yeah, I did. No, well, I haven't.
Brad plays it. You play that all the time.
Yeah, it's a ukulele though. It's not as bad. Not as hard.
Action's a little different.
Smaller scale.
I don't think people really notice grind these days, or maybe some people do. I don't usually, but this the encore, I think this is the second time they've played that song. So this is the first time we heard that after 12/30/98. So that's kind of cool. And I think someone got the numbers. Someone forgot their numbers or something. They were just having fun. But at this point in the night, like after 600 songs, like whatever, you know, you mess up the number, you know, one number off. So
it was 599 songs.
500, exactly. See, this is what happens. This is what happens. So we go to the next night, Saturday, March 7th. I think according to Phish.net, this is the sort of lower rated of the, or the Fishnet reviews, the lowest rated of the three. But again, they like hit the ground running with some lot of songs. And again, the first set, very songy in that there's millions of songs.
I think that this is entirely accurate.
I couldn't get into this one.
No?
This is the one I didn't go to.
Yeah.
RJ, you may remember, like,
I do remember.
I did not have $1,000 in my pocket, and I was not going to pay $500, and our friend Chris Hedge and me didn't have a ticket. I got Friday and Sundays through the lottery.
Yeah,
didn't have a Saturday, but and I didn't end up getting one. We had a good time anyway. We went to the Hooters, went to the Applebee's, the whole thing. But I'm sad I missed it. But I'm glad. It might be one of the reasons that it's so rated so poorly on Fishnet, because.
Because you weren't there. Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I think you gave me one of the Fridays and probably a Sunday, so thanks.
Yeah, I hope I did.
I hope I got you back. Matt,
no, you haven't.
Matt or Jonathan, do you guys have any highlights from this first set? Because one thing I just want to say is that throughout the whole first set on the soundboard, at least, you can just hear a guy yelling, "Tube," after every song. And, like, I totally get it, you know? I think I've been there, but just don't do that. Just don't, like, that's annoying.
Hold on, RJ, 98 Hampton, we've talked about it probably. November 98, you wrote "Tube" on the inside of a 12 pack as like your sign, which is like, RJ, it's not very big, dude. It's like the inside of the side of a 12 pack, right? He's like, "No, but I'm making a sign, bro." And then, so we took it in, and we Hampton GA, you know, went to the floor, went to the rail, and then they played "Tube."
We were only 19 years old, dude.
Tell that guy to just make a sign.
Exactly. Dude, make Jesus a sign. Christ. Anyway, they didn't play "Tube," but Matt or Jonathan, any highlights from this set for you guys?
I would agree. Probably this is the low point of the three nights. There's not as, like, in the first and third nights, there's something that you can look towards if you want a jam as a jam. This is just a lot of songs, and they run through them real fast in succession. But, you know, if you look at it as, you know, getting as many songs is possible because you haven't seen any of them in 5 years, and they definitely accomplished that. And I don't think anything's poorly played or anything like that. This was the night for me, the way I look at it, I was up in the seats the first and third night, but I was down on the floor and pretty close this night, and just, you know, having my mind blown, you know, by being that close to the band once again after so much time off. Jonathan, what'd you think?
I'm not going to tell you I hated anything, and I don't even know. I don't really have I don't have the perspective to say this is the low night of the weekend or whatever. We sat on Page side a little further back and had a great view, and people who watched the lights could watch the lights. We had a good crew around us. It was slowly we're growing, you know, more people coming together.
Those oddballs who go to fish concerts to look at the lights.
Yeah, I don't know. People do it, I hear. I dance with that. If I open my eyes, I get dizzy and fall down. So just don't do that. But, you know, it was at this point, you know, we were like, well, what's left? I mean, they played so many songs last night and so many of the big heavy hitters that, okay. And so we were all scrambling to figure out what was left. And I will say during this run, I did something that I probably haven't done since, which we weren't on Twitter, but I was posting to the Metfish board that I was on, the Week for Pog message board, as they played the songs, and I was just, boom, here's a song. And people were following along as it happened on the board, and it was a little bit faster than the interns from the road, because they didn't know, don't know these songs, because they're all probably young kids and never seen Fish before.
You're beating them?
Yeah, but but I don't do that anymore, thank God. I just put my phone in my pocket. But this first set has 15 songs. I sat and counted them earlier. I was like, what the hell? But it's good. There's micro jams on Melt and Reba and the Antelope. And in the second set, we had Rock and Roll and Ghost. None of them are exceedingly or particularly long. There's I don't think, you know, the Antelope doesn't really go type two or anything. And the Melt, only because it's Melt and it's kind of gets out, but barely. Ghost, same thing. It just kind of starts to go out. Rock and Roll gets a little out, I think, but not too long. And then they just drop back out of it into the next thing. And it's a fun show. So I think
Ghost
enjoyed
was a highlight. Sorry, go ahead. I love that Ghost.
I agree with you. I think the Ghost and the highlight, the Antelope, though, is really intense. I had a lot of fun with that, revisiting that one. The Mike's Groove is probably the flattest Mike's Groove and doesn't really take me there.
I'll take you there. Jonathan, I have a good trademark attorney I know, in just in terms of micro gems, just getting it, you know.
Hook them up.
Yeah, getting it trademarked or copyrighted or something. Like, you gotta nail that down before they come for you. You know what I'm saying?
Before the man takes it.
I agree. I thought the Ghost was the kind of the highlight of the show. Did you guys, I guess in terms of the Melt, like, I thought that was actually, you said it went out there a little bit, Jonathan. I thought that was like one of the most, experimental jams of the weekend, which is cool that it was Melt, but it didn't go super far out there.
Yeah. You know, they pushed it and then they pulled it right back. It doesn't go off the rails or anything. And,
fourth song of the first set. So,
yeah. So Matt, do you think that they were pretty nervous?
I think, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if like nervous is the right way to describe it. And of course, anything that we say is just sort of like, you know, completely guessing and making shit up. But I would say like maybe something that you could, you know, posit about it was like getting their sea legs under them again. And, you know, probably they probably felt like they had to rehearse a lot of the songs because they hadn't played them for so long and they couldn't just show up and play. And if you're going to play, you know, rehearse songs, then you might as well play them. So they were just trying to get through a lot of stuff, you know?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. They pound through so many songs, and the ones that you expect to open up, some of them really they start to just a little. And they pull it back before things fall apart and they finish the songs and it's good, but it takes them a couple shows to really, really open up. We'll get to that though.
Yeah.
So let's talk about opening up before we get to night three. And that is, I didn't make it to night two, as I told everyone already. And my friend Chris and I were back at the hotel room, which was probably the third grossest, worst hotel room I've ever stayed in my life. I mean, it was fucking terrible. Like, it was terrible.
What were
four
your
dudes?
Well, now we need to know what the top two are.
Yeah, I want to know one or two.
So number one, well, these are interchangeable, I guess. One or two, 1A, 1B. There was a hotel in Hell's Kitchen that also the same dude, Chris, man. I'm talking about, I stayed in. It was
I stayed in that one with you.
Yeah.
That was horrible.
There was a shared bathroom and there was like a drug addict in the bathroom. Remember that?
That was actually a really scary place.
It was terrible.
I think I've stayed in that hotel.
There was bulletproof glass, like for real bulletproof glass that you had to pay through.
Yeah. Brad and I both slept with our clothes on top of the blankets.
on top of the covers?
Yeah, on top of the
covers. And we woke up and our friend Chris was like all up in the bed, like sleeping, like, underwear only. We're like, dude, what are you doing? Anyway, so, and then the 1B or 1A was my wife and I stayed at a place outside of Nashville where it was sketchy. And then we walked back and there was a one-legged dude in the hallway asking for money, like he was like panhandling in the hallway of the place, and it was real bad. So, it was bad. Anyway, so
night three,
16 songs in the first set, again.
How many?
Incredible, 16.
Wow,
insane. So, Matt, what did you like about this set?
Sanity.
I liked the third show maybe I liked overall the best. The first night had the excitement and the fluff hit and stuff like that. Third night they seemed to be the most together and the most adventurous, probably comfortable on stage. The Sanity opener was awesome. There was so we mentioned the balls hanging from the ceiling earlier. Each night they had found a point in the show to like towards the end to drop the balls onto the audience so that they were kind of like, you know, getting volleyed around. Happened during Bouncing Around the Room the first night, and I think maybe it happened during like Character Zero the second night. But the third night during Sanity, when Trey sang "I Don't Care If the World Explodes," the band stopped playing and one of the balloons in the back of the ceiling exploded. It was like a really, really great visual gag, and they went into Wilson from there, and it was kind of got the crowd going. We had a great time this night. There was somebody, a guy that we met who I haven't seen him in a while, but I used to see him on tour a lot, who sort of orchestrated our entire section of Hampton Coliseum, like hanging out together and partying. And it was really great. So it was one of those nights where like we went in with like five people, and by the end of the night, we were literally hanging out with like 40 people all at the same time. It was a good time. So we had a lot of fun that night. It was a very celebratory mood. And I think the disease from the set two of this night is probably the musical highlight. The one time that they really did go type two in the second half of it, it finds this very beautiful, patient place. That's quite a departure from Down With Disease, and is a great lead into Seven Below. So I think that was kind of the highlight of the whole run.
I agree that, so this, I complain about it now, you know, complain in quotes, but Down with Disease is always, I see them, I see it always at the beginning of a second set. RJ does too.
Yeah.
But this, to start 3.0, or the, you know, the third show of 3.0 was just a wonderful, the Horse Sound in the Morning. I was surprised at the variety, I guess, in the shows. And by night three, set two, they were still kind of bringing things out that were a little bit surprised. I didn't expect them to be where they were. So, you know, the music again wasn't too deep. I think I agree, Matt, that the Down with Disease and the Seven Below was a highlight. But I don't go back enough. We don't give enough credence to these shows. I think that's my major takeaway. Jonathan, what do you think?
Well, you know, I want to go ahead and give all the credit to Hampton Coliseum as the perfect place for these shows to happen. So our crew, because a couple people couldn't be there the first night or whatever, it finally trickled in. So we had a big group. We were on Mike's side this night, looking straight across the front of the stage. And only really Hampton is one of the few places where you can pull that off.
Yeah.
So points to that, or what, you know, Matt's experience where they had just this huge, great big crew together. And that's one of the beauty of that place. So shout out to one of the best venues in the country.
Can I just say one thing real quick, Jonathan, which is on another Osiris podcast, Daily Soundcheck, Lawn Memo. He just this past, I think 2 days ago, did the Hampton and Winston-Salem 97 soundchecks. And he went into like a really cool and detailed just explanation of how they did the panels on the outside of the building and the history of the Hampton Coliseum. And yeah, I thought it was really cool to listen to. So people should check that out if they haven't yet. So
it's a wonderful, magical building. That being said, the music was real good. I thought we had one micro jam or so with the gin with the major key peak jam as well to finish that out. And good songs, though. We had a great Undermined, Rockin' Maze, the random George Jones cover, and a pretty hot but, you know, compact version of Free. And then, yeah, full-blown Type 2 jamming with Down with Disease. Kind of gets out there for a little bit and lands into a brisk but really nice Seven Below. Horse Silent happens, and then that also, I gotta say, the twist into 2001 is terrific. The things that Paige and Trey are doing when, you know, it's very kind of spacey and weird, when Fish starts playing the 2001 drum beat, they keep going with their weirdness for a moment, and it's that transition is really nice. And this is just great music.
One of the visual memories I have, other than the balloons or the balls that Matt's been talking about, is Paige coming out with his keytar.
Yes.
This was this the first time?
That was the first time.
Frankenstein with the keytar.
Incredible.
James Brown's keytar.
I was like, what are they doing? This is amazing. Yeah, that was awesome.
So,
agreed.
It's like the Chris, are you doing the Chris Farley? Yeah, exactly. Remember when you came out with that guitar? That was awesome.
I think the other like big moment from this night that always sticks in my mind. I mentioned when we were talking about night one about the roar in the crowd when they started Fluffhead being the loudest thing I ever heard. I actually probably should correct myself because I actually think the loudest thing ever. All three nights, Trey didn't say anything to the crowd at all. They're completely silent. They came up, they played, they bowed, they left. They came up for the encore, and Trey just said, "Hey, thanks, everybody." And the place went off for like, it was 2 or 3 minutes, I think, that it was just like this unbelievable rapture of sound. And then they sang Happy Birthday to Fishman's dad, but like Trey just had to keep stepping away from the mic. It was just like people were not going to let him talk. And it was like this huge exhale of the entire community after 5 years of being away following Coventry and everything that went down there, and then the stress about tickets and hotels and travel and getting in and getting seats and everything. To me, that was the moment it was like, all right, people, Fish is on again. We're all doing this thing. And it was really a celebration.
Yeah. That's a good point. That's a really awesome highlight.
Well said.
So this was 80. There were, I guess, 87 songs played.
Wow.
Throughout this 85 over three nights, which is,
you gotta get it right, RJ. Come outrageous. On, man.
Okay.
People
okay,
expect
take two. Take two. Hey, guys, in the studio, can I start that over? Okay, take two.
Did you count happy birthday?
I counted happy birthday three times, just for good measure. anyway, 85 songs over three nights. That's insane. That's all.
Yeah, that was, I mean, the whole article I was talking about. That's the whole thing. That's all it was about. They played 85 songs. It's incredible.
It's like a really short article.
Did you know they played 85 songs?
And the person was like, yep. So
no, he was like, I thought it was 87.
Matt, do you have any takeaways going back to these shows?
Just fond memories. And when I was looking back through some pictures that I took from that run and thinking about it, it was a cool time in my life. I was, I guess at that point, maybe like a year or so into dating my now wife. She was at the shows with me. I was with my, my best friend who became my best man at my wedding, who we had met through Phish, but we'd never gotten to see Phish together. And, a whole bunch of other friends that I had made, you know, through the scene since Coventry that we all got to see. Started seeing Phish shows together. But one thing that I was remembering was while we were waiting in that line to get in the first night, some people from Mockingbird / Phishnet were handing out stickers that it's in the style of like a Hello, My Name Is sticker. But it's instead of that, it said, since Coventry, I ... And you're supposed to write it in. And I wrote on mine, got my shit together. And which was funny to me at the time. And I'm thinking back now on how cute it was that 26-year-old me thought I actually had my shit together at that time and how things changed since then. So it's kind of been cool, like, to think back about the last 10 years of my life and, you know, marriage and child and this podcast and my career and everything. It's like, we've had this opportunity to have Phish back in our lives as we go through this journey. So it's very, very, very fond memories to me.
Jonathan.
Oh man. You know, I want to echo one of the things that Matt said in particular, which is that I got to know so many people before these shows that I hadn't seen Phish with, and I got to see Phish with them finally at these shows. And I, you know, you laughed about their nicknames earlier, but I stayed with Pie Guy and Birdman for the New Year's shows. These guys are
at all funny about it, the nickname Birdman.
Hey, he came up with that one himself. And these guys are great people, and you know, we finally got to do this thing together, and we're still at it, and 10 years later, and it's just been, you know, I've been seeing Phish. I started seeing Phish in '94, so I needed to see them again. I was so glad to have that outlet in my life. I'd seen a lot of bands over the years and kept myself busy and had kids and wives and whatever. But, you know, not having Phish, it's just another gap in my life. And they came back and closed that gap. And I saw a crap ton of Phish shows in 2009. Kind of like what Matt said, you know, a little bit of what if this is it? But you know that now they're here to do the thing and keep making Phish music, and it's wonderful to be where we are now, and I'm glad I was there 10 years ago.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's interesting because we're used to, as humans, just like, if you put a lot of energy and effort into things, you expect to be rewarded for them, sort of. And I think a lot of people left Coventry feeling like we kind of got screwed as fans, you know, and it wasn't, I think people were concerned with Trey and everything else, but like it was unresolved. And I think a lot of us who had, you know, been listening to and going to shows for years, and that was just like that was just a sad ending, you know. I didn't actually think Phish was ever going to come back. I don't know why, but I assumed they wouldn't.
I didn't think they would either. I mean, after that, and then after seeing a trade show a couple years later that I walked out of.
Yeah, I think we walked out of the same one, but not
we
together.
We talked about this the other day. We didn't know each other yet, but we had similar opinions, apparently.
I hope I held the door for you on the way out.
You might have. I was pretty pissed, and I might would have otherwise slammed it. No, I'm kidding. I wasn't that pissed. I was disappointed, and I was sad, and I really honestly did not believe that we would see Fish again, because I was concerned we wouldn't have a guitar player for the band for a long time. And
Yeah.
But we do.
It's so cool that we get to reflect on this, like, 10 years of being back as we're kind of having a little... we're throwing ourselves our own party for our sesquicentennial.
So yes, we are.
It's cool, because if this was our 150th and we were just talking about, like, a random show, it might not have felt as important. So it's cool that these overlapped. But now that we're, you know, fans, I think, feel like you get out of Fish and music and lots of other things what you put into them, you know, and we keep going and we keep buying tickets and we keep trying to get through Ticketmaster and we keep, you know, spending lots of money and time, and it's always worthwhile. That's just like going back to these shows, you know, took a lot of time and effort to figure out how to get to these shows, and it was like not the most musically rewarding three nights, but like for all the reasons you guys mentioned, it was just, man, so memorable and so awesome. So happy to be there. So that was great. And Brad and I got to hang out, which was fun, in the third scared, worst hotel experience of his life.
Sorry. Yeah, that's right. You got to rank them. I mean, you guys don't have those in your head?
I got a few.
No, but the Hell's Kitchen one, thank you for reminding me, because that's at the top. Yeah. Cool. So guys, what else before we let everyone on with their Wednesdays? Or Thursdays if they're listening the day later, Friday 2 days later, et cetera.
et cetera.
Anything? I guess.
Not much, man. Thanks for, this is back to the 150th. This is RJ's brainchild. Look at him. He's like the grand poobah wizard.
Definitely feel like a wizard, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, this is, man, awesome project. And yeah, I think we said at the beginning, it's the feedback and the comments and the introductions and all that stuff that keeps us going and also reminds us that we're doing this for the community and not just so we can all, you know, stare at each other on the screen while we talk about Fish. But, and it is a lot of work. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of effort, but I think we're all, you know, happy to do it because we have fun, but also other people have fun. So keep sending us thoughts and feedback and questions. And if you haven't yet, give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And yeah, we're going to be back soon with more of this Fish discussion. Do you guys agree? Should we keep doing it?
Why not?
We got to get to like 200, right?
I say we stop at 199. Just to fuck with Brad.
Do it.
You know, I think I mentioned this once before, but in January of 2016, I was going off on some sort of crazy crackpot theory of telling my wife about something related to Fish. And she said to me in a really nice way, you know, like maybe you should find some sort of outlet for this energy that you have for the band. Like maybe
it's fucking obsession.
Like maybe create something or like give something back to the community or something, which like I think reading between the lines, she was like, even though she's a fan, she was like, just stop it, please.
Just stop talking to me about it. Find
like,
someone else.
Two weeks later, we went to Mexico and I came on the show as a guest and recapped. And then like a month later, RJ and I met and then we did the tweezer thing. And here we are a few years later. And so I think that all kind of worked out conveniently. I have an outlet to talk about this stuff and I met you guys and I've met a lot of really cool people. So I don't know.
Yes.
I say let's do another 150, man.
Let's do it.
Holler.
Let's do it. We've been, man, it's been so fun.
Do we have
fun.
To do them tonight? Because I'm tired.
Yes, right now.
Right okay. Now. We're going to do it tonight. We're going to do
it
tonight.
We put it in a new cassette.
All right, guys and girls, thank you all for listening. Thanks for your support. We're going to see you in a couple of weeks. We hope that you enjoyed this. And please, please, please keep on rocking.
I'm soul.